يا أيها الذين آمنوا إذا نودي للصلاة من يوم الجمعة فسعوا إلى ذكر الله وذروا البيع ذلكم خير لكم إن كنتم تعلمون.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. In this series of lectures, we want to look at the exegesis, the commentary, the understanding of Surah Al-Jumu'ah, the 62nd chapter of the Noble Quran. And we hope to go over this chapter in a bit of detail to understand and to better appreciate the contents of this particular surah of the Quran. Because obviously it's important as Muslims to understand the content of the Quran from what we read. And this being the chapter of the day of Friday, which talks about the importance of the Friday prayers, which is, as we know, an obligation upon the Muslim community, it becomes even more important to look at this particular chapter of the Quran to see what it is that Allah is instructing us about in this blessed chapter. Now, before we go into the actual commentary, let's go into some of the basics, some of the introductions about this particular chapter. One of the first things that we see when we look at what the commentators of the Quran tell us in relation to not only this chapter of the Quran, but every single verse and every single chapter which is within the Quran, is that they are revealed in certain, obviously, times and in specific locations or regions of where the Prophet Muhammad, may God's peace and blessings be upon him, where he was living and where his family and companions were also residing. And what our scholars do is they differentiate the verses of the Quran and the chapters of the Quran by the place of revelation. So we have some verses, some chapters which are known as Meccan verses, and some which are known as the Medinan verses or chapters. And the main and the prime difference between these two, what our scholars of the science of Quran tell us, is that these are not just geographic locations, the Meccan and Medinan verses, but rather the Meccan verses, we're told, are revealed at a time before the migration. So as we know that the Prophet began his mission in Mecca, and after 13 some odd years after the beginning of the propagation, he moves to the city of Medina, to the north of Medina. And so the earlier verses of the Quran are known as Meccan because they were revealed before the migration, whereas other verses of the Quran are known as Medinan because they were revealed after the migration. It is very well possible, however, that Medinan verses were revealed geographically in another location, such as Mecca, or somewhere between these two points. But again, we are looking at the time frame of when they're revealed, either before the migration or after the migration. And scholars of the Quran, again, they tell us and they explain to us how we can easily differentiate between the two. One of the examples they tell us is that any verse of the Quran, or a majority of the verses we can say, which speak about the practical laws of Islam, praying, fasting, the pilgrimage to Mecca, giving in charity, giving in alms, and the Friday prayers, that these are all acts which were related to the Muslim community when they had established a state, so to speak. And so therefore they tell us that these particular verses of the Quran and these particular chapters are revealed in Medina, because that is when the Muslims had the ability to openly practice and live the religion of Islam. Whereas those which are the Meccan verses, they primarily, but not exclusively, but they primarily speak about issues related to the religion, about theology, about the oneness of God, about the concept of God in Islam, about the Day of Judgment, about the Prophethood, and these sorts of theological discussions that the Prophet would have been having with those initial individuals who were still following paganism or any other traditions that they were following at that particular time. So scholars of the Quran tell us that Surah Al-Jumu'ah, chapter number 62 of the Quran, was revealed in Medina. It was revealed in that period after the migration. It contains 11 verses, so it's a relatively short chapter compared to other chapters of the Quran. And interestingly enough, it's the only chapter of the Quran named after a day of the week. So this in itself should signify the importance to us of the day of Friday, and obviously of the special prayers which the Muslims congregate to perform on the day of Friday. When we want to look at the content, let's see how the chapter is divided. We see that there are actually two overall general themes in this particular chapter of the Quran, and then there are a few sub-themes which Allah then goes forth to elaborate upon. So the first main theme that we see in Surah Al-Jumu'ah is on monotheism and what we term religiosity, or being an adherent to the faith and a follower of a particular dispensation, a particular faith or way of life, and in this case obviously the faith of Islam. Within this topic of monotheism, of tawheed, and of religiosity, we see the following four subcategories. We look at the characteristics of God, how God defines and describes himself in this particular chapter. We have the rationale behind the sending of Prophet Muhammad, may God's peace and blessings be upon him. Why did Allah send him? What was the need for a prophet at that particular time, in that particular geographic era, region, and that particular era? We also learn a bit about the Day of Judgment within this particular chapter in the first section of it. And the fourth subtopic is that of being truthful to the message. Once we have completed the discussion on these, on this one main theme and the four subtopics, we then jump into the second area of discussion of Surah Al-Jumu'ah, which is about the Day of Friday. And again, as we know, the Day of Friday is a very important day for the Muslim community. It is in Muslim countries, it's a day of holiday. It is a part of the weekend, so to speak. And again, we know that there are acts of worship other than the Friday prayer also, which have been recommended for the believers to perform. But in this particular chapter, Allah looks at Friday from the religious Islamic perspective. We are told about the importance of the Friday prayers. We learn a bit about the etiquette of the prayers, of how to carry ourselves in the Friday prayer when we attend this massive gathering of believers. And we conclude the look at the Day of Friday with a historical event in relation to the Friday prayers and what was happening or what had happened, what had transpired during the time of the Messenger of Allah. May God's peace and blessings be upon him. And from this, we conclude the discussion on Surah Al-Jumu'ah when Allah concludes with looking at this historical event. So we will go through all of these discussions step by step, verse by verse. So again, to develop a better appreciation of this beautiful chapter of the Quran. One of the areas also that our commentators of the Quran that they delve into when they, or before rather, they begin to actually go into a commentary or an exegesis of the Quran is to look at the benefits of recitation. So we have traditions from the Prophet Muhammad, may God's peace and blessings be upon him, and also the infallible imams that follow him, in which they give us specific merits or benefits of recitation of certain chapters of the Quran. And again, Surah Al-Jumu'ah is no exception to this rule. We have a few traditions which we wish to quote that our scholars of the Quran have referred to within their books. The first tradition we have comes from the Prophet Muhammad, may God's peace and blessings be upon him and his family, where he himself has said the following. One who reads Surah Al-Jumu'ah will be given 10 good deeds for each person that has attended the Friday prayers and all of those people who have not attended the Friday prayers in the Muslim lands. So you see the first tradition that we have where the Prophet is telling us the maximum reward that is given to an individual who recites this particular chapter of the Quran. That if you were to enumerate every single Muslim in every single Muslim country who has attended the Friday prayers and those who have not attended the Friday prayers, and you were to multiply the rewards by 10, this is the reward, as the Prophet says, that Allah will give to such an individual who recites this particular chapter. And we'll obviously appreciate the fact that it's not enough to just read the verses of the Quran, but also the reading is a precursor, it is the preamble to thinking, to reflecting, and ultimately to acting upon the content of these verses that Allah has revealed to us. Let us look at another tradition on the importance of the recitation of Surah Al-Jumu'ah. In this tradition from the sixth Imam, Imam Ja'far ibn Muhammad al-Sadiq, may God's peace and blessings be upon him, he shares the following beautiful rewards which are present for the one who recites Surah Al-Jumu'ah, and he says, it is incumbent upon every believing Shia of ours to recite Surah Al-Jumu'ah and Surah Al-A'la on Thursday night for their Maghrib and Isha prayers, and to recite Surah Al-Jumu'ah and Surah Al-Munafiqun in their prayers on Friday afternoon. Whoever does so, it is as if he has done the same actions as the Messenger of Allah, and their reward with God is paradise. So again, we see in this beautiful tradition coming from the sixth Imam of the faith of Islam and the founder of what we refer to as the Madhab of Ja'fari, the reward is immense in his words, and he shows us a blueprint of how we should carry ourselves on Thursday night and on Friday, that we should try our best to recite these particular chapters of the Quran, to read these in our prayers on these days, to gain again the maximum reward for the acts which he has laid out. One side note to mention, and this is coming from the fiqh or the jurisprudence of Islam, is that when our scholars talk about the recitation of a surah, a chapter after Surah Al-Fatiha, they tell us that if you are reciting any chapter of the Quran, with the exception of two of them, and you get halfway or past the halfway point of that chapter, and you forget maybe some verses of that particular chapter, or you realize that you started with one chapter but you really wanted to recite another chapter of the Quran, that you are allowed to break the recitation and to recite a new chapter. That's not a problem. But this rule is null and void for two particular chapters of the Quran, that is Surah Al-Ikhlas and Surah Al-Kafirun. Meaning that if a believer was to recite these, he or she began their recitation of any of these two chapters, and they were at the halfway point or a bit after that, and they say, I don't want to recite this, I want to recite something else, it's actually forbidden, it is not allowed in the fiqh, in the jurisprudence, to stop the recitation and choose another chapter of the Quran. But there is one exception to this rule, and that is for Friday prayers. Prayers on the day of Friday, that if a believer was to recite either Surah Al-Ikhlas or Surah Al-Kafirun, and they got to the midway point, and then they realized, or you know, they came out of that state of temporary negligence, that this is Friday and I should be reciting Surah Al-Jummah and Surah Al-Munafiqun, then our scholars give the permission to break the recitation of Surah Al-Ikhlas or Surah Al-Kafirun, and then recite obviously a new Bismillah, and to begin the recitation of Surah Al-Jummah or Munafiqun, whatever the case may be. So this again should show us the importance of these two particular chapters on the day of Friday, that we're allowed to break the recitation of those two chapters which normally cannot be broken, and we can begin the recitation of Surah Al-Jummah or Munafiqun. So this shows us the importance of these two chapters, that the contents are very deep or very profound, and that we are allowed to actually make that change, and our prayers would be intact and we would not have committed a sin in the eyes of Allah. Now that we have gone over some of the preliminaries of this chapter of the Quran, and we've seen some of the benefits of its recitation and some of the exceptions to the rule of recitation, let us go into a commentary, a brief explanation of the verses of this particular chapter. Before that, let's listen to a recitation of verse number 1 of Surah Al-Jummah.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Yusabbihu lillahi ma fis samawati wa ma fil ardi al-Malik al-Quddus al-Aziz al-Hakim.
Whatever there is in the heavens glorifies God, and whatever there is in the earth also glorifies God, the Sovereign, the All-Holy, the Almighty, the All-Wise. In this, the very first verse of Surah Al-Jummah, chapter number 62 of the Quran, Allah lays down a beautiful vision and a beautiful picture of the power and grandeur and splendor and majesty that He Himself possesses. He begins by saying that everything which is within the heavens, within the cosmos, and everything within this earth, it glorifies Allah. And the word which Allah uses, the phrase which He uses, He says, Ma, whatever is in the heavens and the earth. This is a term used in Arabic, meaning everything in existence, not only living creatures with intellect, but really everything that is in this world that Allah has created, things that we know, things that we do not know, things maybe which are on other planets, in other solar systems, in other parts of our universe. We are told that all of these things glorify Allah. As we see in the Quran in chapter 24, verse 41, Allah tells us, Indeed, each and every one of them know and perform their own prayers and forms of glorification. And in another verse, chapter 17, verse 44, Allah tells us, however, you do not understand their glorification. So everything in existence, whether it be human beings, the animals, the angels, the plants, the trees, insects, the mammals, you know, the creatures which live in the ocean, under the ground, everything praises and extols the virtues of Allah. But we obviously do not have the ability to understand their means and their mode of glorification and of sanctification and of praising of Allah. But we understand from this verse and other such verses of the Quran that everything in existence is in a state of glorification of their Creator. The next part of the verse is interesting on many fronts. One reason obviously are four beautiful names of Allah which are mentioned one after the other. But another interesting component of this is that, and this is something which is unique to this and maybe a few other verses of the Quran, is that Allah uses more than two of His names. You know, most times when we read the Quran, Allah will say, you know, Allah Ghafurun Rahim, or Azizun Dhuntiqam, or Rahmanun Rahim. He uses two of His attributes, two of His characteristics. But this verse again presents us with something quite unique in that Allah gives us four of His titles back to back, one after the other. And each one of them is a very beautiful trait of Allah and shows us a unique aspect of the Creator of the universe. We see that He is, first of all, Al-Malik, that He is the King. Allah then calls Himself Al-Quddus, the Holy, the Sanctified, the Glorified. He is Al-Aziz, the Almighty. And He is Al-Hakim, the Wise. Now, what do these four words, these four titles of Allah mean? Let's look at each one of these independently from one another. The first title is Al-Malik, which we translate as the King or the Sovereign. And we have two definitions for what it means when we say that Allah, that God is Al-Malik, that He is the King. We say He's a King, meaning that He has absolute right and authority in terms of commanding and forbidding His subjects in the performance of actions, meaning that He is the sovereign authority. He has the right, He has the authority to dictate and tell us what to do and what not to do, because He is the sovereign over top of us. And also Al-Malik can mean that He is one whom all others are reliant upon. So He is the sovereign authority in the universe, and everything in existence relies upon Him for their sustenance, for their subsistence, to live their day-to-day lives. So this is two meanings of the word Al-Malik, the title of Allah Al-Malik. And we see that we first mentioned this title that Allah is Al-Malik, that He is the King, the Sovereign, and His power is over everything. And then from there, let us look at what other attributes Allah gives to Himself in this chapter of the Quran. The second title is Al-Quddus, which is the exaggerated form of Al-Quds, or Al-Quddus, meaning that He is all holy, He is all sanctified, He is all perfect. Every form of perfection and beauty and exaltedness is within Allah, within this trait. So He is far from any form of imperfection. So He is at one level a King, but He is a King which is entirely perfect, purified. He is Himself pure, and He gives purity to others. One of the meanings of Al-Quddus is this. It means also that He is greater than what us as human beings try to equate Him as having as traits. So yes, He is a King, as we mentioned, but we don't look at Allah as a King. As we know kings in this world, He is far greater than what we can determine a King in this temporal world to be. So we use these words, these phrases, to give us a picture and an understanding of our Creator. But obviously we realize, as Al-Quddus is telling us, that He is even greater than what we can imagine Him to be. So while He is a King, He's not like an earthly king. He is not one who commits evil, who oppresses, who is unjust with His subjects. No, He is sanctified. He is much higher than what we can envision temporal leadership in this world to be. So now we understand Allah as Al-Quddus. What is the third title that Allah gives Himself in this chapter? Third title is Al-Aziz, that He is the Almighty. And again, He is not only Almighty, but He is a King who is sovereign, who is holy and does not oppress his subjects, and he's almighty, all powerful. He does what he wants to do. But obviously, we also appreciate the fact that whereas Allah can do what he wants to do, but in essence, he does in a way set limits that he does not transgress. So he does not oppress his servants, although he would have the ability, the might, the power to do so, but he doesn't do that. So he is Al-Aziz, he is the Almighty, but he's a benevolent king who is pure, and he has authority to do as he wills on this earth with any of his creations. And then ultimately, at the end of this chapter, we refer to Allah as Al-Hakim. Al-Hakim is, for general translation, the wise, the one who is does acts with a wisdom, with rationale. Allah does not do anything out of vain, for no reason at all, just to pass time, as human beings might do. No, he is a king who is holy, who is all-powerful, but he also does his actions with wisdom, with thought. There is a rationale why Allah does something. We, obviously, as human beings, don't understand the wisdom of Allah many times, and we sometimes question, why does Allah do this? Why does suffering happen? Why do bad people get good things? Why do good people have bad things happen to them? We tend to question these things and say, why did Allah do this? Why did God do that? Why do these things happen? But we have to realize that He is the King, but He's also Al-Hakim. He's also the wise. And He does all of the things that He does for a specific purpose and a goal in mind that we are, again, not able to perhaps fathom and realize today. But we have to accept Him as being all of these traits and all of the other traits that He talks about in the Quran and within the prophetic traditions of the Prophet Muhammad and of his infallible successors. May God's peace and blessings be upon all of them. We end this discussion and we, inshallah, God willing, will continue our brief look into Surah Al-Jumu'ah, into the 62nd chapter of the Quran, to see how Allah further elaborates on many of the issues that we will go through over these next few discussions. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.